This is Monty in the Morning, the show Phoenix Magazine readers voted number one talk radio show in Arizona.
Number one during your morning commute.
Number one whenever news breaks during your day.
And number one whenever and wherever you want to talk sports.
Now it's time for Monty in the Morning.
Hey, yo, man, it is Monty in the Morning. Every morning, live on the YouTube machine. Make sure you get to themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Takes you right to YouTube, hit subscribe. You're good to go. Big day on the show today. We're going to talk about Mark Cuban, Kobe Bryant, Elon Musk, the Lakers, the Jazz, the Chicago Bears, and the fucking Eagles.
Bro.
Yeah.
It's been 40 seconds, and you already broke the cursing ban on the show.
Did I really?
Yes.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. Anyway, the point is we have a lot to get to today. And by the way, our first endeavor into sneaker buying on a mass scale with technology is today. I'm a little hesitant to say it out loud because I don't want the sneaker gods to frown on me. You know, because the sneaker gods never favor me. So.
Right.
I said, yeah.
Right.
But the point is, yeah. So the first sneaker thing is today.
You mean the draw where we're going to use a machine, essentially?
To get our things?
Yeah. We can't say the word because then that would, you know.
You sold me a bot, you prick.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, that's an inside joke that you would never understand. I really need to stop doing drugs so early.
Yes, yes.
Picked a terrible day to sniff glue.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with Mark Cuban and the national anthem? Because this story, to me, is not getting enough run. And again, I go back to Colin Kaepernick. Whenever these conversations come up, I go back to Kaepernick for the one simple reason that I feel like, and again, I'm open to the idea that this is just me, but I feel like we're in a situation where hypocrisy rules in all things when it comes to the national anthem. I feel like hypocrisy rules. Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, made a decision over the summer not to play the national anthem before Mavericks home games. He even went as far as to consult NBA Commissioner Adam Silver.
Right.
So he went to the powers that be in the NBA and he said, hey, I don't want to play the national anthem at American Airlines Arena in Dallas. And apparently they approved that.
Right.
So you have a situation where Mark Cuban has just said, we're not doing it. Now, go back to Colin Kaepernick, who lost his entire career, a bunch of endorsement money, pretty much everything he wanted to be doing. He was canceled not because he stopped playing the national anthem, but because he knelt during the national anthem. And to this day, he still does not have an NFL career over it.
Yep.
So why is there a double standard? I would love to understand that.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because Mark Cuban's white and Colin Kaepernick's black, and we judge black people in this country for expressing their views. I mean, that might be the simplest way to say it, you know, just on a surface level. I also think you have to talk about the fact that Mark Cuban's an owner. You know, so when owners do things, and I don't even mean just in the NBA, this is the NFL, this is Major League Baseball, like this is every sport. When an owner does something, oh, well, it's okay because they own the team. But when a player does something and we don't necessarily agree with it, oh, turn the NBA off. This is a trash product. I can't watch the NBA. This is dumb. You know, we get all mad about it. And I think you're exactly right. Hypocrisy does rule in our country, you know. Hell, we got into some argument yesterday on the show about the whole impeachment situation with Donald Trump. There's a ton of hypocrisy in something like that. So I think whether we're talking sports or politics or whatever it may be, hypocrisy does rule. But I think the really sad thing is that when you are a player in any of the core four major sports in our country,
yes,
you better be willing to not play the game that you love if you're going to kneel on the sideline. You better be willing to you know, not play the game you love if you wanna rock the boat, whether it's a contract situation, whether it is what you believe in terms of rights being violated in this country, and you want to make a stand as an athlete, better be ready not to play. And that's really sad because it shouldn't be you as an athlete expressing your thoughts should not result in you losing your career, which is exactly what it is.
But I feel like that's exactly what happened here.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what happened to Kaepernick. So my question is, where is the cancel culture that went after Colin Kaepernick? Why aren't they going after Mark Cuban? And again, I know people are going to hate this, but I think it's largely about who's sitting in the White House right now. Because you can't tell me that if this news had come out while Donald Trump was still president and a vocal, very vocal anti-Trump person like Mark Cuban, who is at the center of this conversation, had said, we're not going to play the national anthem anymore. You can't tell me that Donald Trump wouldn't have lost his mind over it.
Because
I think he would have.
Yeah.
And is this a big deal? Like, I feel like we make so much out of the national anthem, yet nobody even noticed until yesterday that the Mavericks were not playing the national anthem before home games.
Yeah.
Is this that big of a deal?
It's definitely, in terms of, like, taking a left turn with the way pregame is handled in sports, it's definitely a big deal. I mean, every major sporting event you go to, the national anthem is executed. And to the point where some national anthems are way better than other national anthems. Example, I can't remember the guy's name, the guy who sings the national anthem for the Blackhawks in the NHL does an amazing job. Iconic. But then you go to just a run-of-the-mill team, whatever sport or whatever, and the national anthem is just kind of a formality. So, yeah, from that perspective, this is a left turn. But I think from a cultural perspective, this shouldn't be a big deal, but I think it is a big deal because of what happened with Colin Kaepernick, because of all the, you know, over the last 4 years, all of the, yeah, cancel culture, all the patriotism, all the in-your-face, hey, this is how it's always been done, so this is how it's always going to be done idea that we've kind of been living in, whether we're talking about, think about it. Think of all the examples that are similar to the national anthem. Like, think about all the fight that was put up about, you know, renaming military bases, taking down statues of figures that were racist in their day or did horrible things.
Yeah.
Like, all of those things that are like the national anthem, all that stuff was hugely dramatic. But yeah, you're right. This probably hasn't caught enough steam yet. But I guess for me as a person, I just don't think that it is some horrible thing that we don't play the national anthem before a basketball game, because people didn't come to the sporting event to hear the national anthem. If they wanted to hear the national anthem, they could pull it up on their phone, right? People came to the sporting event for the product on the court or the field. That's it. And to have a good time. So the idea that we would push that on them, I think, is an interesting conversation.
I don't know that you're pushing it on them. I feel like, and in this country, I get it. I think that tradition matters. I mean, we in my opinion, I think we get way too wrapped up in tradition. Mm-hmm. I think we eat horrible foods for tradition. We do stupid things like Rush Week for tradition. You know, I mean, I just think, look at our political culture. How much of it is traditional? Like, I think we do things out of tradition every day. That doesn't make them right.
Yeah.
I have no problem with playing the national anthem or not. Frankly, I don't think it impacts anything.
Right.
And I'm just curious. I'm curious how many people agree with that, because I think we look for reasons to be upset. I think we look for reasons to have controversy, frankly, and I still think is ridiculous, because what's really controversial about this? I mean, he went to the commissioner of the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, well, people will tell you that the reason it's controversial is because not playing a national anthem, like, this is the same stuff they said about Kaepernick, like kneeling or not enjoying the patriotic moment is disrespectful to our soldiers and our police and our service members. And
is
it's like,
though?
It's not.
Is it
it's
though?
It's not. I don't think it is.
I'm curious if people agree with that it is disrespectful, because I just don't believe that this is a respect the flag thing.
Mm.
I don't think that this is a respect the country thing. I mean, I guess if you're a veteran, your opinion would differ, I guess. I mean, does this mean that the Mavericks don't respect you know, military veterans? No, certainly not. I think it. They just made a choice. And frankly, with the way that culture's been going in the NBA and all the activism that we've seen with NBA players, and they're kneeling or raising a fist, or I think the controversy is likely more that the national anthem is being played when somebody's in the locker room or kneeling or with a hand up. That pisses far more people off, because the thing that's amazing to me is cancel culture is so busy canceling, they didn't even notice that the Mavericks weren't playing the anthem.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even notice it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a player, not a white supremacist,
yeah,
not a Proud
right
Boy.
No issue.
Not a far right Republican. Nobody noticed that the Mavericks weren't playing the national anthem. And now that it came out, or somebody noticed, now all of a sudden I feel like it's turning into this, oh, Mark Cuban's un-American, what a prick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a feeling that's what this is turning into.
Yeah.
And I think it's laughable.
And I don't think Mark Cuban cares what you think. Like, what
I hope he doesn't.
What the general person thinks.
Yeah,
like, I
hope
really
he doesn't. You don't become a billionaire like he is and run your life and your business the way he does, caring about what everybody else thinks.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'm glad, because I think it's that kind of thinking that progresses this country forward.
I agree completely. I think he's always been somebody who's stood for, you know, doing, you know, what he thinks is best and building his reality, really. And I think that there's a fine line with that, because one could make an argument that that's exactly what Donald Trump did or does. But I think the difference is that Mark Cuban is just looking to help himself. He's not looking to tear people down or do anything. He's looking to just make a good situation.
Yeah, I would never compare Cuban and Trump.
Yeah, because they differ so much. But my point is that when you talk about, hey, you know, if we're going to herald Mark Cuban for building his own reality, like, you know, not caring what you think, that whole thing, I'm just saying that a person could compare the two in that light.
Well, in that they're both failing right now, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Mavericks are 11-14, and they're awful.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Kristaps Porzingis, who apparently is just now figuring out how to play basketball again.
Apparently.
You have Luka Doncic, who is one of the hottest young players in the NBA, and you just can't figure it out, which is remarkable, considering the way the West is being won right now. I think it's really interesting, the hierarchy?
Mm-hmm.
The power rankings in the Western Conference right now. Like watching the Jazz last night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're pretty good.
Yeah,
I don't know if you heard
are.
That. I'm not sure if you knew that.
Never said they weren't a good team.
They're pretty good. So the Jazz are 20-5. Why are we wondering if they're the best team in the Western Conference?
Well, by record, they are the best team in the Western Conference, no doubt. But they're not the best team in the Western Conference until they beat the Lakers in the postseason. Then you're the best team.
Okay, so you're on this ship that says until they win a championship, they're not going to get respect.
Is that what I said?
That's not what I said.
No, that's not what I said. I said you got to beat the Lakers in the postseason. In a postseason series, beat the Lakers. And then you can call yourself the best team in the West. Because until you do that, they are the best team. Frankly, because they have better matchups. They got mismatches all over the floor with you. And you got to figure out how to outplay them. And that's the difference. So I'm not sitting here saying that the Jazz are a bad team. They're a hell of a team. They're 20-5. They have the best record in the league. They're shooting the lights out. Donovan's playing well. Rudy's doing his thing. Like, they're playing great basketball. But again, a lot of their schedule is against teams that are not great. And everybody wants to say, oh, well, Dallas has all this talent and, you know, all these teams that they've been playing have all this talent. Okay, great. They're playing awful basketball. Look at their record. So they are a great team. There's no question about it. They're a great team. We see this every year. This is not new. This is not surprising. This should not be like, oh my God, the Jazz they're doing a great thing here. They do this every year. They're a dominant regular season team. They need to show that they can do it in the postseason. They need to show that they can handle their business against the Nuggets in the postseason, then handle your business against the Lakers, and get to the finals. You get to the finals, you'll have all my respect if you do that.
Here's who they've beaten in this last stretch. Hawks at Nuggets, good win. Pelicans, Pelicans, Warriors, Knicks, Mavericks, Mavericks, lost at the Nuggets. Pistons at the Hawks, at the Hornets, at the Pacers, Celtics last night, 122-108. I mean, there's a lot of mediocrity in that. There's a lot of juicy basketball teams in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Jazz are the best team in the Western Conference. I obviously agree with that. I think they are by far a better team than the Denver Nuggets, just not when they play each other. And I'm not even trying to be a jerk about it, but I look at their matchups with the Nuggets, and I'm amazed that the Nuggets consistently find a way to beat them, and they do it by getting Rudy Gobert out of the paint. It is really that simple.
Yep, they create opportunities.
Yeah, and looking at the way the Celtics played last night, they simply couldn't make enough shots. The Jazz outshot them last night. That was the difference in that game, is that the Jazz are an elite shooting basketball team. The problem is, so are the Lakers. And when you have the matchups that you're going to face against the Lakers, I'm not sure how you deal with Montrezl Harrell on this team. If it's Montrezl Harrell, let's say it's AD, Harrell, LeBron, and whatever guard combo you want to put out there. Schroeder and KCP, let's say. I don't know how the Jazz match that. Because, one, Mike Conley now has been out for a couple of nights with this hamstring injury, which is par for the course. He's injured often. They haven't really missed a beat without him. But when you run into this next stretch of games, including the Lakers and Clippers, you got to have Mike Conley healthy. Yeah. That's going to be a critical factor. The other question is, can a guy like Montrezl Harrell guard a Bogdanović? I don't know. Who do you – I mean, if you start looking at this Laker team man for man against the Jazz, like who do you put on Donovan Mitchell?
Schroeder.
I'm probably putting Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
KCP then gets Mike Conley.
Yep.
Right?
Which I would say that those are close. It's really close because Schroeder has a ton of length. He is longer than Donovan Mitchell is, but obviously Donovan Mitchell is a better player and can work around that. So, you know, obviously I would give the edge to Donovan Mitchell in that matchup, but I just think the thing here is that if the Jazz are on offense and we're talking about Lakers defensive matchups, like, you know, even if you do put Montrezl Harrell on Bogdanović, all Montrezl has to do is run him off the three-point line. That's it. The Lakers will win that series just simply by not permitting the Jazz to shoot a lot of threes and make a lot of threes and get going. If you just close them out, make their life difficult, and when they don't shoot well, that's the real question. And this is the thing that I think nobody wants to talk about. When the Jazz don't shoot well, they lose. It's that simple. They don't have another way to win. Because of the way Rudy plays, they don't have a way to, like, play interior basketball and impose their will inside the three-point line.
Well, and the other thing is the Jazz are never going to out-athlete you.
That's true, too.
You know what I mean? Like, they're not – Bogdanović is making and breaking teams on three-point shooting. And he's doing it really well. I mean, that's not to slight Bogdanović in any way, shape, or form, because when you're putting up 16 points, four boards, two dimes, like – He's doing it. And when you are shooting, he's shooting 47% in his last 10 games from three.
Right.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at that, he's shooting 42% on the season. That's insanity for a guy with that size and length. And I think that what is really interesting to me is that he, you know, I would like to say that he can have that impact against the Lakers. The question is, if you're the Lakers, what do you do? What do you do with Rudy Gobert?
Yeah, I think it really depends. I think the Jazz would want to put Rudy Gobert on Marc Gasol. And then I think if you're the Lakers, Marc Gasol is just going to play the elbow. That's all he's going to do. He's going to try to stay away from the basket. He's going to try to facilitate from the elbow, and that's going to cause chaos because there's no way that Rudy is going to be able to guard against Gasol's jumper because Gasol can shoot it. You have to respect it. So if you have to step out to you know, play that, you're not going to get back for the cutting LeBron. That's not going to happen.
I'll be interested to see who they wind up, what that lineup would look like. Because when I look at who they generally start there, I mean, you're starting Marc Gasol most nights.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be interesting. Do you start Marc Gasol against the Jazz? I would think so.
I would play with a lot of size against the Jazz.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think that you would see a lot of AD with his back to the basket in the high post.
What I would do if I were the Lakers against the Jazz is I would start Anthony Davis, Marc Gasol, and LeBron James together, those three. And then with those three, what I would do is I would, depending on how the Jazz choose to allocate Gobert, so if they put Gobert on Gasol, which I think they would, then I would try to draw Gobert out by putting Gasol just inside the three-point arc or right around the elbow area of the floor, and then let Anthony Davis operate. And if they're going to put Derek Favors on Anthony Davis, I'm going to feed Anthony Davis because he'll eat his ass up.
I don't think that I don't see that happen. I think it, and this is where I guess the out-athlete thing comes in.
Yep.
Because if you are the Lakers, you're looking for those matchups. You know, like Niang has no place in that series.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to play.
Yeah.
Favors is going to have to play more. Because, again, I'm curious, what does a Bogdanovich-Anthony Davis matchup look like?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
That's the greatness of Anthony Davis. I mean, he doesn't have somebody who's an apples-for-apples matchup.
I wonder how difficult is it to keep Bogdanovich in front of you if you're Anthony Davis? Because Bogdanovich going to the basket is not an easy
choice. No. It's not, but that's a win for the Lakers. That's a win.
That is, anything that's not a three-point shot out of the Jazz is a win.
It's a win. I mean, that's just that simple. So, you know, that's why I say, like, yeah, I'm sure the Jazz in that series, like, if we flip the coin and talk about, like, what the Jazz would have to do offensively to win the series, I think their key to success against the Lakers is going to be ball movement. That's the only way that you're going to be able to get around the size and length of the Lakers. You're going to have to move the ball a lot, and you're going to have to be very active in your sets. We can't get into this whole thing, and they're extremely guilty of it, and they get away with it because they've played a lot of mediocre teams where their offense becomes a bit stagnant. A lot of times it turns into Donovan's going to bring it up. He's going to throw it to Joe Ingles, who's going to push it to the corner,
it's
and then
Jingles,
he's going to come
please.
Back out.
Can you get – it's Jingles.
Yeah, Jingles. Okay, great. Whatever. The guy, it's just going to come right back to Donovan. He's going to throw it around the wing. It's going to come right back, and then they're going to play pick and roll. And that's where the out-athlete thing comes in again, because when you have more athleticism on defense, when you're guarding the pick and roll, you can cover that ground. So that's why I say, like, I don't want it to come off as though I'm just a Jazz hater, because I'm really not. They're a great team, but I don't think that they have the roster to beat the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. I don't. I don't believe that. And part of me isn't 100% confident that they will beat the Nuggets in a semifinal. I'm not 100% sure on that because they went to the death against the Nuggets in the postseason.
Well, and I think you're seeing Jokic has really stepped his game up. I mean, he is playing incredible basketball.
I never thought he'd be a 50-point guy, honestly. Well, never thought he had that in.
But how is he doing it? It's because he's shooting the three well. He is shot the ball incredibly well. And you can see when he gets into the paint, he has multiple moves that force teams to collapse on him. And he winds up kicking the ball out, and they're knocking down threes.
Yeah.
This is – I don't know where this trend stops, though. You cannot be a team that lives and dies on the three and expect to win a championship.
There's so many that do.
Quinn Snyder has said you cannot shoot too many threes if you're the Jazz. He has talked openly about that. And I'm telling you right now, that is the surest way to get eliminated from the playoffs. See James Harden and the Rockets.
Yep.
If you look at the way that the Jazz operate, they only shoot threes. They accidentally wind up going to the basket.
Jordan Clarkson and Donovan Mitchell are really the only guys that consistently look for the mid-range.
Yeah, well, and to his credit, Bogey, Bogdanovich goes to the basket a lot. Jingles will occasionally go to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at Royce O'Neal, if you look at the bulk of their guys, they shoot threes all the time. The only guy that doesn't is Rudy Gobert.
Right.
And he is the guy, he's benefiting from all those threes because when you shoot a lot of threes, you miss a lot of threes. The best teams in basketball usually miss 60% of the threes they take.
Mm-hmm.
So they miss 6 out of 10. And Rudy Gobert, is cleaning up.
The problem is when Rudy doesn't clean up, that's a transition bucket for the Lakers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, by the way, 2 weeks from tonight, it's Lakers and Jazz.
And I think that'll be a preview.
That's in Salt Lake City, too, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I think those, if you're looking at the schedule, those are the kind of games that matter. By the way, the upcoming schedule for the Jazz gets tougher. I mean, you're going to see the Lakers. You're going to see the Clippers. I do believe you're going to see the Nuggets again. So you're going to start seeing some of these teams that actually have talent to compete with
their upcoming schedule. Home for the Bucks, Heat, Sixers. Back to back at the Clippers. Home for Charlotte, home for the Lakers, then a road trip to end the first half, Miami, Orlando, New Orleans, Philly.
So
it gets exponentially more difficult. By the way, if you haven't been paying attention, the buzz is really difficult. Charlotte is a very difficult team to handle right now. Because they are fast, and guess what they do?
Run.
And they shoot the hell out of the ball. They shoot the three. And LaMelo is playing at an all-star level right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not a gimme game. If it's the Bucks on Friday night.
That's a grind.
That's a must win.
Yeah.
Because, and again, I just ask, who does Rudy guard in a Bucks series?
He doesn't. He doesn't play. Well, he'll play, but he doesn't. I mean, he's not.
You're going to wind up on Lopez, but what does that mean?
That he's not by the basket.
And what does that mean for the ball? What does that mean for Giannis and in the new to boop dwell?
Yeah, nice running shoe,
Giannis. Hey, Giannis. What that means is Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to have a good run at the basket.
Yep.
Because that's a guy who doesn't shoot. So then my question is, who do you match up? Giannis versus
Royce O'Neal.
I would guess it's got to be Bogdanovich.
Nah, he's not athletic enough.
I don't know about that.
He's not athletic enough to stay with Giannis.
I don't know about that. All I'm saying is you're going to have to figure out how to match up with teams like the Bucks.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I think is a nightmare matchup. I think if the Sixers are going to be very difficult for the Jazz. Because again, anytime Rudy Gobert is not in the paint, they're going to struggle.
Rudy versus Joel is not a good matchup for Rudy.
No, because Joel Embiid is knocking down the three, and he's playing phenomenal basketball in the paint.
Yeah, and he's got mid-range handle. He's got a turnaround. He's got pump fakes. I mean, he can play.
Eric and Raleigh in this morning on the YouTube chat channel, Warriors proved you can't shoot threes enough.
Yeah, but enough here's threes. The difference.
The mid-range is a bad shot. The Jazz have to play zone against the Bucks. Leave Giannis alone on the perimeter.
Listen. The Warriors showed you that having two Hall of Fame shooters, greatest of all time shooters, allows you to beat teams by just shooting threes.
Well, they had three at one point, and what happened?
And they won.
They won a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And they shot a hell of a lot of threes.
And by the way, now that neither of those guys are on the floor for the Warriors and it's just Steph, he's still showing you that he's an MVP caliber player.
And what's he doing?
He's shooting a lot of threes.
Shooting the hell out of the basket.
But again, but the difference is we're talking about the greatest shooter of all time. Like Joe Ingles is not the greatest shooter of all time. Bogdanovich is not the greatest shooter of all time. They're really good, but they're not Steph. Nobody is Steph.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly how all this plays out. It'll be interesting to see what this matchup looks like. I'm telling you now.
Mm-hmm.
All of these matchups suck for the Jazz. And so will they be able to mature and will Rudy be able to play? Can you match up Rudy Gobert on Giannis? I think that's a terrible idea.
So I like the idea of a zone against a team like the Bucks, who are built like the Bucks, who are so reliant on Giannis to penetrate. I think that if you played zone against the Bucks, that would allow you to essentially play team defense against Giannis. Because to Eric's point, Giannis has improved his shooting a little bit. It's not as bad as it was, but he's not a confident three-point shooter by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he is right there with guys like Zion and Ben Simmons, these guys who just are not willing to shoot the three, and when they do, it looks ugly. So, like, I more feel like that with the Jazz defensively, if they were to run a zone out there on the floor, they would be in okay shape. But I still maintain that when you play zone in the NBA, teams will adapt on the fly. So what you're going to end up having to do is run some zone, then run some man, then run some zone, then run some man. And that tires you out mentally. It's taxing mentally to be disciplined with your assignments in the zone defense. So that's why I say I hate being the guy that constantly brings this up. But if you're going to bring it up, if Rudy Gobert was more talented, we wouldn't be talking about this. If he could shoot more, if he was a little more athletic, like, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, if my aunt were my uncle, she'd have a sitting anyway. My point is, she'd have some cojones.
Your mom are hillbillies.
I know. The drop machine works.
I haven't had a chance. See, everybody says this, oh, you're not playing drops. Where am I going to play drops? Like, what? I need content to play drops. What am I going to do? Like, just start playing random drops about, like,
is this the dagger?
Yeah, like, I mean, what do you want me to say here? Come on.
Yeah, I got you. Anyway, the point is, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Real quick on the Nets. And I know that you are, you know, wanting to execute lewd behavior every time we talk about Kevin Durant.
I want it.
You're thirsty. I get it. Kevin Durant's out about a week now with this coronavirus quarantine thing. And again, if you didn't hear this story, I don't understand this. Kevin Durant is in quarantine because a Nets employee was driving him around one day. Neither one of them were wearing masks. The Nets employee tested positive for Rona.
Suckmyass.com.
Such trash, dude.
Why are you not just, dude, you're in a town car with another person during coronavirus. Can you just maybe put a mask on?
Everybody gets a test.
How difficult is this? Like, this is not some next level concept. You're in a car, an enclosed space where people are breathing and farting. Can you get coronavirus through farts?
Physiologically, it's a non-starter.
I bet you can. Anyway, the point is, you're in the car with somebody who's got coronavirus. You didn't wear a mask. You just lost a week of your NBA career.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I guess it is what it is. But at what point are we? No, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I'm not going
to
get into this
thing.
I try
to stay calm and not curse.
Mike, you son of a... At what point are we going to take coronavirus seriously? Having said that, the Nets are trash.
So I said, yeah.
They lost again last night. And you had DeAndre Jordan and the Beard going at it, you know, chirping at each other. That's a team that lives and dies on the three, and they weren't making the three last night. They lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say this because, again, I'm going to need you to keep your hands above the table.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the same team without Kevin Durant.
Hey, look here, man.
They're not. Well, see, they're not an elite team without Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it has nothing to do with James Harden.
Yeah.
Again, and I know we've talked about this a million times on this show,
mm-hmm.
Kyrie Irving's the problem when Kevin Durant's not playing.
Listen, every team, whether we're talking the Nets, the Lakers, any like really good team, has that one guy on their team that the whole team revolves around, and that's Kevin Durant for the Nets. I'm not saying that Kevin Durant is light years ahead of anybody else on that team talent-wise. What I'm saying is that he's the glue guy for the team. He's the guy that they get the ball to when they need to settle the ship down, when they need to bring some calmness to the offense, when they need to just chill things out on the floor. He gets the ball. He puts the ball in the hole. Simple as that. The difference is that when Kyrie has the ball, people don't respect Kyrie the same way they respect Kevin Durant.
Correct.
Because Kyrie is just a ball hog. Kyrie is a guy who's going to be on the sideline crying his little eyes out last night because they got their ass handed to him by the Pistons. In Plumlee, you know, whereas Kevin Durant's going
to
say,
they,
hey,
they lost to the Pistons.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. I mean, they should never lose to the Pistons. And this is why I say, and we specifically talked about this, and I think you brought it up first, but when it was just KD and Harden and everybody else, they had a great thing going. So much to the point where I would have called them a championship contender with that setup. Because you got two superstars and everybody else knows their role and everybody else understands, hey, I'm Joe Harris. If I knock down my shots, we're winning this damn game. Hey, I'm DeAndre Jordan. If I rebound, if I play a good pick and roll,
if you throw me a lob, and I wreck that rim.
If I do my damn job, we're going to win basketball games. But that's not Kyrie. Kyrie wants to handle and ball hog and get his numbers, and he doesn't care about winning.
Mark's Hope says, the difference between the Nets and the Warriors is that Steph is soft and he was willing to play second and a lot of times third chair. Mm-hmm. Kyrie will never be that guy because he hates his teammates and he only wants his.
I completely agree.
He hates his teammates.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah, he hates his teammates.
I mean, there are times where I can agree with that, dude.
That's hysterical.
I can agree with it.
Real quick on the Kobe Bryant situation. There's an update on Kobe's helicopter crash that killed him and everybody aboard his helicopter.
Heavy sigh.
And by the way, I would encourage you to consider that there was more than just Kobe and his daughter on that helicopter, mm-hmm. right? There were other families.
Nine others total.
We find out now that the worst thoughts that we had at the time of Kobe's death, which was over a year ago now, were true. The pilot, who was highly experienced, was flying in heavy clouds and fog and got disoriented and thought that he was flying upward when he was actually flying downward. And it was a catastrophic failure in execution by this pilot because he became disoriented in cloud and fog and literally could not see. Like, he essentially was flying in the dark. And he rapidly descended into this hillside in Calabasas. And you just think, empathize with the people on that helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
Put yourself in their seats. The terror and the sheer unknown, but knowing what's about to happen.
Knowing you're going to die.
Must just be terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it must just be horrendous to know that you are about to fly yourself into a hillside or hit something.
And I think the real thing here, like the hard part to take is that by all reports, this pilot was not pressured to fly that day. It's not, I mean, by everything they're coming out with evidence-wise and what they figured out, it wasn't as though Kobe or anybody else on that helicopter was like saying, hey, you better take us, or like
they were talking about getting town cars.
Just driving up.
Yeah, and they should have, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's just I cannot imagine that. There's a lot of ways. You guys, and you're probably too young, but I'm sure Mrs. Monty and anybody else that's 40 plus will remember the movies Faces of Death. Do you remember those movies when we were kids? Like, terrifying movies. There's a lot of ways to die. These avalanche stories this week, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, here in Utah, there have been horrendous avalanches.
That is a miserable death.
That is suffocation,
mm-hmm.
which is a way I don't want to die. It's just, it's awful. And I think about the stories that we've heard, these deaths from coronavirus, you know, these avalanches where just all of a sudden mountainsides of snow are on you. And they estimate that when you are at the base of a mountain and an avalanche occurs, you have less than 7 seconds
mm-hmm.
to make a decision. And that decision likely is going to mean you're going to live or die.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, a lot of these people that suffocated in these avalanches this week, even had their parachutes on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they make parachutes, these essentially airbags,
mm-hmm.
that if you're caught in an avalanche, you can explode an airbag.
Yeah.
And the snow was so much. We've had so little snow in Utah this year. We had a major snow event over the last week that the snow just had nothing to hang on to. There was no base.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been so dry that there's no vegetation holding the base.
Yeah.
So all this snow just came down these mountains. And even these airbags did not save people.
Mm-hmm.
Several of those people that died in the avalanche had those airbags on. And can you imagine being under thousands of pounds of snow?
No.
In a helicopter where you can't see anything, the pilot thinks he's flying up and he's actually flying down.
I mean, I would rather, to be honest with you, and this is an awful conversation to be having, honestly, but like, I would rather
be in
the helicopter than under an avalanche, dude.
Oh, yeah, because the hard stop ends it quickly.
Yeah.
You know, I just, yeah, it's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine. So I hope this puts to bed the Kobe incident. And now we can get on past that, and his family can get closure on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was not a secret. What the National Transportation Safety Board announced yesterday, the NTSB, what they announced was no secret. I think everybody had a pretty good idea of what happened.
Yeah.
That helicopter shouldn't have been flying.
No.
I hope now this brings closure to his wife and his children and his family.
Yeah.
Because this has been, I can't believe it's been a year already.
It's insane. I remember exactly where we were. We were sitting in a store. Mrs. Monty was trying some stuff on. We were sitting there and you were like,
we were at Arizona Mills.
You were like, holy crap, Kobe died. Is this real?
Yeah, my phone started blowing up with people. And I was like, stop. I remember, and I won't say his name, but a friend of mine sent me a text and was jabbing me because he knows how much I love the Lakers and Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me, he said something to the effect of your boy's dead.
Congratulations, but that's bullshit.
Yeah, and I was like, stop, man. That's not, and I was like, that's not funny. And then as soon as I sent that text, I got the ESPN and the Bleacher Report. And I remember that it was a TMZ story who originally broke Kobe's death. So, yeah, I remember exactly where I was when that happened. All right, make sure you hit subscribe on the good old YouTube machine, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Make sure you hit subscribe. So, Jake, we're only 30 minutes away from an auction. So we told you this week that we're starting to really buy sneakers in mass numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've dibble-dallied.
Hello, it's dabbled.
Dilly-dabbled in selling sneakers. And it's interesting. It will be interesting to see how this works. Because in 24 and a half minutes, we're going to have our first, I'm going to be careful. We're going to have our first manufactured shoe buy.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-programmed.
Yes.
And it'll be interesting to see if it works. We've actually invested a pretty good chunk of change in this.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
And the hope is that you get, shoes that people are after and you sell them for a profit.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt that we're going to win shoes. I mean,
eventually you'll figure out the setup.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
We're going to win a lot of shoes. I don't have any doubts about that. It really just is a matter of like the unknown is how many shoes will it win for you? So like, are we talking three shoes? Are we talking 10 pairs? Like how many are we talking about?
And how much is that bill going to be when you win 10 pairs?
But the cool thing is that, for every pair of shoes you're hoping to make,
It'd be nice to make
25%. So, it's scalable, and that's a nice thing. So even if we did, drop a G on shoes, we would make that back, plenty. And that's the cool thing about it.
Well, and the other part of this is that the shoe we're trying to buy today, I was looking on StockX,
mm-hmm.
is already almost double in value, depending on the size.
I'd be happy if we just got one pair. Honestly, I'd be happy.
You would?
Like for our first time, I'd just be happy if we got one pair.
But I'm telling you, I'm going to keep some of these shoes we're buying.
Oh, for sure, dude.
There's no
doubt. Yeah, dude. I mean, that's the whole point. That's part of it for sure. I mean, like some of these rare ones, you definitely got
to
keep.
By the way, it's starting to piss me off that Nike's not making 15s in all these shoes.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I don't know why they stopped.
I don't get it.
They should have called and asked my opinion.
Duh.
As Elon Musk should have, and this is another story that you are just swollen in the nether regions about, which I really don't understand this. Help me understand this.
Mm-hmm.
You want to live on Mars.
I didn't say that. That's not what I said.
Well,
once again, you're twisting my words.
Bro, what are you talking about, man?
Okay, so Elon Musk blew up a rocket last week. So much so that my wife was like, oh, hey. We work within 10 feet of each other all day long, which I don't know how she tolerates that. Because again, I have body odor issues and
I'll drop that motherfucker.
Yeah. And I talk loud all the time, but that's not really the point. She like showed me her phone. I don't have body odor issues, by the way. I shower often, like three times a month.
Yeah.
She showed me her phone and this rocket had exploded and crashed to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Elon Musk's SpaceX.
Yep.
Testing a rocket to go to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn, that's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he says the other day, hey, we need to go to Mars and we need to do it quickly because I'm concerned that humans are going to extinguish themselves by 2050.
Just take it nice and easy, okay? Just relax.
Whoa, Tesla guy. Take it easy. 2050, bro, it's 2021. He's talking about in 29 years, mm-hmm. he believes that the human race could be extinguished.
Uh-huh.
Like, really? I mean, I know this pandemic has killed a bunch of people, but...
You know.
We have science, right, that is working to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
There was something about World War III... Like, this is stuff that do you really worry about World War III ending the world? Well, we have nukes, and we have nut jobs like Putin, who, by the way, did you see that Joe Biden has access to all the Putin-Trump tapes now?
Oh, I did not see that. That's trouble, bro.
Yes, so that'll be interesting. But, we have all of this stuff going on,
mm-hmm.
and what's so interesting to me is that Elon Musk is convinced humans will extinguish ourselves by 2050.
Yeah, so his thought process is that one of two things is going to happen. A, and this is truly what he's concerned about, A, World War III will happen, where there will be nuclear fallout, there will be nuclear war, and most of the human race will be extinguished. What did he say? 30 years or something like that?
29 years.
Yeah, like 29 years. That's his main concern. But the second concern, and this one is legit, there's no getting around the second one he has, which is, hey, we're going to outgrow Earth. We're at 7.6 billion people on this planet, and the resources that we have are not endless. And so at some point, this situation won't happen in our lifetime. Admittedly, it won't.
2050 is in our lifetime.
No,
are you high?
No, that's... God.
I better live 29 more years.
You're ridiculous, bro. I'm not talking about the World War III thing. On something completely different.
My bad.
Damn.
My bad.
Dude.
By the way, Eric and Raleigh wants to know if you're going to be Matt Damon up in here. You know, like being a potato farmer on Mars. He's curious.
The other guy of simple taste.
Yeah. If he would stop wasting money on pipe dreams and spend money to feed people, we would be fine.
Here we go.
But is that not what I said about Elon Musk to start the show?
Here we go.
If Elon Musk would put the billions of dollars that he's putting into flying people to Mars, and he would put that towards pandemic vaccines or, you know, 100, what, like climate change. It's not too late to save the climate, to save the earth. It is. And this is the thing that bothers me. If we would, and as much of a kook as my wife is about recycling, if everybody was as adamant about recycling as Mrs. Monty is, the world would be a much better place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she will smack me in the mouth if I do not recycle plastics.
Because I'll drop that motherfucker.
Right? Like, we pretty much outside of Powerade Zero, we have stopped using single-use or plastic bottles because
wait, you're off the core water bandwagon?
No, I'm not. That's a recycled bottle already one time. Like, okay. Core water is the greatest thing ever.
Can you recycle a core water bottle? Or
yes.
No? Oh, okay, you can.
Yeah, and they give you your own cup.
We're getting somewhere.
The lid is its own cup.
Wow, that's really innovative.
Right? That's what I'm saying.
That's going to solve world hunger.
It will, because you can recycle that.
Don't sass me, Berkus.
I'm telling you. You guys, anyway, why do you rip me over water? Avion's too expensive or it's all I drink.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, it's the urine of Christ. Let's just be honest.
It's the urine of Christ now. I thought it was the tears of Christ.
No, that's core.
Oh, okay.
Core is the
okay.
You know, my point is,
uh-huh.
My I'm officially now going to hell, so maybe I should go to Mars. Yeah, I was saying, no, God, what I meant was, I didn't mean like his urine. Anyway, the point is, listen, bring it down a notch. Mm-hmm. The point is mm-hmm. that I don't have any interest in going to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I am not the guy. I, with all due respect, I don't want to be a pioneer in space.
Mm-hmm.
That's all cool. And if you've sold so many Teslas that you're able to, go to Mars, knock yourself out, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. Well, the planets are going to align.
They are.
And then we can fly shit to the moon and then fly it to Mars. And the Martians and us are going to hang out in a brand new... Like, he's talking about how he's going to build a city on Mars.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how we're going to have this cool science shit that's going to make an ice evaporator... There's ice on Mars. It's got Mars dirt in it. So we're going to have to clean the ice. Like, Donald's going to come up here and wash the coal. We're going to clean the ice with a hose. Like, what do we do? What? He's going to spend over $1 billion on some evaporator that's going to melt and clean water on Mars. Are you serious?
Would you be more interested in this if you knew that the planet was going to blow up or like the end of the world was coming?
No, I don't think I would.
So you would just die?
It's going to happen anyway.
Okay.
I mean, am I wrong?
No, everybody dies. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know. You're just very closed off to it.
I have no desire. I'm not the guy who wants to go to space. I'm not.
I'm surprised.
Like, I love Chuck Yeager. Bless his heart. But I'm not that guy, man. I'd rather fix the atmosphere on Earth, and I'd rather fix the environment on Earth. I'd rather stop dumping oil into San Francisco Bay like happened this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather stop doing that. And I'd rather start planting trees and eating earthly products. I'd rather take care of our methane problem, which is the biggest problem on Earth that nobody talks about, because we won't stop eating steak in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I mean, it's that stuff that's going to fix the Earth. It's truly sustainable, usable electric vehicles. It is, you know, like there's all this stuff we could be doing, but we got out of the Paris Climate Accord. We do this stuff that just chops our legs off because we won't think about anything that's past our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
We have to think. I have to think about your kids, and you have to think about their kids. Like, we have to hand something forward.
Right.
In all due respect and seriousness, we have to stop with single-use plastics. We've got to stop. Like, one of the things that's come out of this pandemic, and I don't know how many people know this, the evolution of straw technology, like, one of the biggest wastes in the world and one of the biggest problems in the ocean is plastic straws from soft-serve cups we get at fast food restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the ocean. They're all over the rivers in L.A. Like, plastic shopping bags. Everybody is pissed at San Francisco because they banned single-use plastic shopping bags. But do you know how many of those things are in the ocean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just... Anyway, see, why do you do this? Why do you do this? Why do you make me talk about Elon Musk being an idiot?
Yes, you did.
You did.
Yes, you did.
It is, and it is your fault.
I'm sorry.
I am perfect, and I don't make mistakes.
Oh, he don't know nothing.
I'm occasionally gassy, but other than that, I am perfect.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right. Glad we got that out of the way.
Yeah, I feel better.
Okay, good.
Did you enjoy, before we get out of here, did you enjoy the impeachment trial yesterday?
I didn't get to see most of it. I enjoyed the highlights. I thought it was funny that Trump's lawyer essentially embarrassed himself.
You know what about his legal team is interesting? One of his lawyers has spent the last 4 years ripping him and suing him.
Yeah.
And now works for him because
it's weird.
He couldn't get people to represent him.
I wonder why.
Well, he doesn't pay them.
You know, just that little thing.
I mean, do you realize how much money? He owes Rudy Giuliani millions of dollars.
Yeah, he's never going to pay it.
And by the way, Rudy's now being sued for billions.
Yeah. So Rudy could really use the money.
Probably.
Can't tell me Rudy's a billionaire.
I actually was surprised that so many Republicans voted that this trial was constitutional.
Telling you. I know there's a difference between voting that it's constitutional and actually voting to convict him or whatever. But I'm telling you, it's not as cut and dry as people are making it out to be. I think when you're playing videos of Donald Trump giving a speech and telling all his supporters that we're going to walk down to the Capitol and I'll be right there with you. Let's go. Like, you don't, how are you going to get around the fact that he incited an insurrection when he's saying that stuff? And so
I don't know.
And so if you're the Republican who has been a Trump supporter, you're really going to tarnish your reputation over this guy? You're really going to say, well, yeah, he did, but I'm still not going to vote for it. Going to do that?
There's a pretty good chance, like, Rudy Giuliani is going to get disbarred in New York.
Good. He deserves to be.
You know, like, I don't know. I was surprised so many Republicans said that they would, and I say so many, wasn't it like 6 or 7?
But that's a lot.
Voted to that this trial was constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many people, I got so much hate on Twitter yesterday for saying I felt like it was constitutional. And it was like, well, Justice John Roberts wouldn't preside over it. That tells you it's a joke and a sham. The problem is not that he wouldn't preside over it because it's a joke and a sham. He knows that Republicans are probably going to sue and take it to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Chief Justice.
Yeah.
So you either recuse yourself from the case when it comes to the Supreme Court, or you recuse yourself from the case while it's going on. So he recused himself from the case while it's going on because he's going to want to rule on it when it comes to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I just think it's fascinating theater to watch.
Yeah, it is. I really do. It is. It matters. Yeah. It definitely matters.
I don't know. I all of these things we're sitting here talking about, and maybe this is just me. I don't know. It doesn't give me a lot of hope for humanity, right? It doesn't give me a lot of, yes, we're going to talk about the Bears. It doesn't give me a lot of hope for humanity. Like, it just makes me think that people have given up on ourselves.
Well, I just think that there's a lot of haters out there, man. There's a lot of crazy people out there. And with Trump's presidency, they were all allowed to come to the forefront.
All right, so we got like 5 minutes left to dedicate to...
Well, that's all they deserve, frankly.
Make sure you hit the subscribe button on YouTube. The Philadelphia Eagles are trying to trade Carson Wentz. They're beleaguered, terrible chemistry, awful teammate, quarterback Carson Wentz. So naturally, the only team that's really shown a lot of interest is the Chicago Bears because, well, they have awful quarterbacks who are good teammates. Everybody likes Mitch Trubisky. He just sucks. So the Bears have been trying to trade for Carson Wentz. They offered later round picks and Nick Foles in return. It's a package that is essentially a bailout. The Eagles get out of Carson Wentz. The Bears get out of one of the worst contracts in the history of the franchise in Nick Foles, and they wind up not giving up first round picks. Well, then the Eagles became the Eagles, and they said, oh, no, 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 no. We were more thinking about a Matthew Stafford package where we get two first-round picks, two late-round picks, a bunch of cash, and Nick Foles. And I'm like, no, man, we're talking about Carson Wentz. We're not talking about Matthew Stafford.
You know, Matthew Stafford actually, like, stays on the field.
We're not, yeah, he actually has talent and can throw the football, and... He's a tough son of a... Didn't curse. Thank you.
Good job.
My point is, Carson Wentz is not worth one first-round pick, let alone two first-round picks and two late-round picks and a quarterback in return.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know who the Eagles think Carson Wentz is, but I'm not even sure I'm willing to give up multiple late-round picks.
Yeah.
And a player and cash.
I would give up one pick and a player.
You realize that you are the Eagles. You're desperate to unload this dude.
Yeah, they seem to be confused about where they're at as an organization. They seem to not understand his value. And there's definitely something to be said for knowing that you don't have a valuable product and still pushing it anyway in hopes of somebody giving in. But at some point, the Eagles are going to have to give it up.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe they can trade Carson to the Giants. Daniel Jones sucks. Thanks, Barry. Good morning. Good to hear from you, my friend.
A little late today, Barry.
You think I'm negative on the Bears or the Cubs? Barry is the ultimate negativo.
Yep.
Miguel Boy, any thoughts on D-Rose being traded to the Knicks? That's an interesting deal.
I mean,
we were talking about this before the show today. One, his Adidas shoe still sucks. I'm not a D-Rose Adidas fan.
Nah, I'm not an Adidas fan altogether.
The D-Rose one was all right. You had that shoe.
Yeah, it was okay.
You liked it. I like him as a player. Obviously, I'm a Chicago fan. As a Bulls fan, he was unbelievable. But this was a Dennis Smith Jr. bailout. I mean, they needed to move on. Like,
he wanted more minutes. So he was literally so desperate for minutes, he was going to go to the G League.
Dennis Smith Jr.
Yeah. And then they moved him. And it was a nice reunion for
D-Rose. But the problem with Dennis
D-Rose.
Smith Jr. is that he's been, his life off the court has just been a wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been a wreck.
He's definitely had distractions. There's no question about that. And I do think he's talented. I do think he's got a place in the league. I don't think he's certainly like one of the best point guards in the league or anything, but I do think he's solid.
No.
I think he could definitely play. He could definitely be a point guard, on a scratch into the postseason kind of team. You know, a team that fights for the eighth seed. He could be a point guard on that team and a starter on that team.
He can score. It's just a matter of, is Dennis Smith Jr. anything other than a 3-and
yeah,
nothing else guy?
Because
he's not really a 3-and-D guy. He doesn't play
great
defense.
He's a dunker, too. He's very athletic.
Yeah, but he really – and I think his game fell apart when he started shooting the 3 a lot in New York. Once he left Dallas, I think there was so little respect for the head coaches that were there that he just started shooting 3s.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. He's a guy that's going to probably have to burn himself down and go to China and try to rebuild his career.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think it depends what he does.
This is it in Detroit for Dennis Smith.
Yeah, he's got to make it happen.
And I want to see the Knicks win, but R.J. Barrett's got to make that layup. By the way, real quick, last thing on the NBA, because I know we got to go here. But last thing on the NBA, is this not the worst stretch of officiating we have ever seen? Just watching that Knicks game last night? Like, I mean, how many fouls? Jimmy Butler, I think Jimmy Butler's dead. I could be wrong. I think he got murdered on the court.
People will die.
I think he got murdered on the court, no foul.
Mm-hmm.
Like, R.J. Barrett going to the rack last night with the game on the line, I mean, gets shoved by Jimmy Butler, no whistle.
Yeah, the late game situation, officials in the NBA like to say, well, we're going to let him play when it's late game because we don't want to decide a game with a call. But really, you did decide the game with a non-call, you know. So I don't know. I think NBA officiating, the issue is that when you get newer officials in the league, and there have been a lot of new officials added because they've had to backfill some guys leaving.
There's been a lot of attrition.
Yeah, you know. So like when that happens, you're gonna have officials who, and this doesn't get talked about a lot, but when you officiate a game, like you have to be up to speed with the game too, just as much as the players. I mean, you have to almost more so because you got to be able to decide, hey, was that a foul, not a foul? Like,
well, and you have to know how players play. You have to be able to anticipate. You have to be able to see.
Yeah, I mean, there's more homework that's got to be done than even a player does.
And you know, the traveling no calls that that have become legit, and they're not like the slide steps. That's all now come into focus.
But
it took a year for officials to learn how to call that.
It did, and I think James Harden had a lot to do with that. I think James Harden was the pioneer of the travel step back, and everyone wants to say, well, his hand position on the ball, and he hasn't technically picked it up yet, but to me it's a travel. It is. You're essentially taking four steps without dribbling the ball.
Miguel Boy wants to know, do y'all stream daily, every day, Monday through Friday?
Yeah,
right around six Mountain, 8 Eastern. Thank you.
Somewhere in there.
Eric and Raleigh's like answering the questions. The officiating in the Warriors Spurs game on Monday night was one of the worst I've ever. It's terrible.
Yeah,
it's terrible. So, all right, there you go. Yes, we are live right here on YouTube. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Just search The Monty Show. Go to our website, themontyshow.com. It actually takes you right to our YouTube channel. Just hit subscribe, and then you are good to go. Thanks to everybody who watched on the stream today. You can also find us on podcast. Anywhere you get a podcast, you can actually ask Alexa. You can say,
dude,
hey.
She heard that, bro.
Did she really?
She heard that.
You can actually say, hey, play The Monty Show, and she will pull it up because we're on Amazon Music. We're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, you name it. Anywhere you get a podcast, Apple, Google Play, go ahead and search The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Until tomorrow, say shoes for all, Jake.
Shoes for all, Jake.